San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
This is Richard Muzio with It's Your Money and Your Life, and we're here with Stephen M. R. Covey. We're going to be talking about the Servant Leadership Institute event that we're very excited about that's coming up in lovely Coronado, California at the Coronado Marriott on March 9th and March 10th. Information at servantleadershipinstitute.com. But again, we have Stephen M. R. Covey on the line. Mr. Covey, welcome. Very much appreciate you being able to spend some time with us. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing great, Richard. Thank you. Delighted to be with you.
Are you going to be heading from cold country out to sunny California to be at Servant Leadership Institute? Just curious.
Absolutely. That was part of the appeal. I know what it's like in March in San Diego.
Yeah, it's supposed to average temperature 72 degrees, and with all this weird weather we've been having around the country, we may have people coming to the seminar just to get away from bad weather.
Absolutely.
And there's so many good reasons to come besides that, too. So really appreciate you spending some time with us. I know you're going to be presenting in a panel presentation. I believe this is the first time in history that you and John Maxwell and Ken Blanchard are all going to be in a panel presentation at the same time. Am I correct?
Yes. I've been on a panel one time with Ken,
okay,
but never have with John. And so this will be the first time that the three of us are together on this panel. And I'm really, really delighted because those two gentlemen are some of the great thought leaders in this world on leadership and on servant and servant leadership.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting. And just by way of background for our listeners, you are co-founder and CEO of Covey Link Worldwide. And I know you are probably one of the most sought-after keynote speakers when it comes to subjects like leadership, ethics, trust, and how to empower people to achieve high performance. And I know your father is also very famous, Stephen R. Covey. He wrote one of the best books I ever read called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Before we get to Servant Leadership Institute, I'm just curious, how old were you when your father wrote his amazing book?
Well, he wrote it in 1989.
Okay.
So that would put me at 27.
Okay. And were you active in your father or with your father in business at that time?
I was. In fact, I had joined the former Covey Leadership Center about 6 months before we put out the 7 Habits book, and
okay,
it was a very exciting time.
Yeah, I can imagine it was. That's an amazing book.
Yeah, thank you.
And I know you are the author of a book, and this is a fascinating concept for me. You're the author of a book called The Speed of Trust. And I think it's an amazing book. I've read it. I think it really shifts somebody's paradigm about what trust really, really means as an economic driver in today's economy. Can you talk briefly about that book and what was the genesis or the thought process behind coming up with that concept? Because I think it's an amazing
concept.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you identified it, Richard. It really was trying to be a paradigm shift that trust is not just some soft, nice-to-have social virtue. I mean, it has that dimension to it. It is a social virtue. But in addition, trust is a hard-edged economic driver. And here's why. Because trust always affects the speed at which you can move and the cost of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see trust going down in relationships or on teams or in companies, when trust goes down, the speed goes down with it. Everything takes you longer to do, and the cost goes up. It costs you more. And that is a tax, a low trust tax. And, you know, think about it for our listeners. Just think when there's distrust on a team, distrust between teams or in a company or with a partner, everything takes you longer, costs you more. But the good news is the dividend is equally real, and that is when the trust goes up in those relationships, on the team, in the culture, when the trust goes up, the speed goes up with it, the cost comes down. That is a dividend, a high trust dividend, and that is equally real as well. And the data is overwhelming that shows that high trust organizations outperform low trust organizations by a multiple of about 3 times. So this trust is not just social. It's financial. It's economic. You can put a value on it.
And what are the elements that have to be in place for the speed of trust to work, or to phrase it differently, when there isn't trust, what are the three or four key components that might be missing?
Right. Here's what you're going to see when there's distrust. You're going to see low credibility, and that could come about either because there's a gap in character or a gap in competence.
Okay.
And both of those pieces are vital for trust. You got to have high character, you got to have high competence. If you lack either one of those, you won't sustain the trust. I think the character is self-evident to people that you know, a lack of character will hurt trust.
Sure.
But same with the lack of competence. See, someone could be a good person, an honest person, care about people. They could have high character, but low competence. Maybe they're not current or they're not relevant. They don't deliver. They don't perform. With such a person, I might trust them if I went on a vacation. They need someone to watch my home, right? Because
mm-hmm.
they're honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I might not trust them on the key project, the key client, the key deliverable, if they don't have a track record of performing. The lack of competence would undermine my trust. I need to see both the character and the competence. So I call that combined credibility.
Okay.
But then the second thing I would highlight would be behavior. We have to behave our way into trust. And in other words, you can't just talk about something and expect to build trust. You have to put it into action, put it into practice. It's what we do and how we do it. And we have to do what we say we're going to do and behave our way into trust.
And so what you're really talking about is how corporations, how entities, how groups, how teams can create a culture that basically elevates everybody to, shall we say, their highest level, not only them individually, but the common cause. Is that correct?
Absolutely. In fact, if you can do that, if you can create a high trust culture, that's like a rising tide that will lift every boat. Suddenly, your ability to do everything else goes up dramatically because trust is a performance multiplier. It makes you better at everything else that you need to do. And, Richard, what you've identified is that we're trying to do this collectively. We're trying to do this not just one leader, although it starts with any one leader, but if you can get enough people getting a common sense of the behaviors that build trust and then a common commitment to try to model those behaviors, and enough people do that, you will move the needle on trust inside of a team, inside of a culture. And when that happens, and there's a cultural norm towards these behaviors, and when I say behaviors, I'm talking about things like talk straight,
mm-hmm.
create transparency, keep commitments, deliver results, listen first, and so forth. Just basic common sense behaviors. There's 13 of them. If you do those things, you'll move the needle on trust. And when trust goes up, everything else goes up with it.
Yeah, I find the business world, I'm 56 years old, so I started in the business world back in 1979 as an accountant, became a CPA, and so here I am more than 35 years later. I don't want to admit that, but I just did. and for me now, the business world, I mean, obviously it's much different now than it was 35 years ago in terms of technology and how fast, forget about the speed of trust, the speed of everything moves. But the world now for me, or the business world now for me, is a much more collaborative place than it used to be. When I started, it was a very competitive place. And the other difference I see is you have companies and individuals who actually view their stakeholders as being much more broad or much more vast than merely, for example, stockholders and employees and so on. It includes the community, the government, regulatory agencies, and everything and everybody that surrounds a business entity. Am I crazy when I say that, or would the speed of trust incorporate the fact that the business world is much more collaborative and there are many more stakeholders out there than just merely, for example, the stockholders of a company?
You've nailed it. It's a new environment, and the name of the game is collaboration and interdependence and partnering. And you know what? Here's the thing. Here's why the trust is so vital. It's hard to collaborate with people who you don't trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be a partner with people you don't trust. Now, you can have a supplier and a vendor that you do transactions with, but What it's trust that turns a supplier into a true partner. It's trust that turns a group of people into a team. It's trust that turns mere coordination into true collaboration. And there's a big difference between coordination and real collaboration. That requires trust. And the nature of the world today is interdependent, based upon collaboration, and trust is the fuel that will help drive it and guide it. Now, you still have to do other things, but you need that foundational element. And then you're right about the multiple stakeholders. And clearly, organizations have evolved to where they're recognizing it's not just shareholders anymore. It's multiple stakeholders, and having a relationship of trust with the various stakeholders, with their own people, with our partners, our suppliers, distributors, with our customers, with regulators and shareholders and all these different stakeholders, those various relationships are important. And to be trusted in all of those relationships gives you a huge advantage. But it's not enough just to kind of play the dominant shareholder mm-hmm. one at the expense of the others. It's a new era of what's expected of leaders today.
You know, I think it's a very exciting time. So switching a little bit, well, not too much, but over to Servant Leadership Institute. Just curious, how did you become familiar with Servant Leadership Institute, or was it vice versa? Did they become familiar with you first?
Well, you know, I became familiar with Servant Leadership Institute and Art Barter as I worked with him some in his work at Datron. And Art had me come out, and I know he's had John and Ken do this same thing. I came out and met with his senior leadership team and presented Speed of Trust. Art's always been a big champion of trust, and what he loved about Speed of Trust is that I gave a methodology, a language, a framework, and a process to really get good at trust. So it wasn't just the concept of, you know, trust is good, it's fast, and how nothing is as fast as the speed of trust. He liked that. He believed it. I gave him language for it. But then what he really connected with him is that we identified how you do it through your credibility and through your behavior, and those 13 behaviors common to high-trust leaders. So I presented with his team, and this was an important part of what they were doing. And through that process, in becoming acquainted with Art and Datron, became acquainted with Art's next phase here with the Servant Leadership Institute and seeing how Art himself was such a great servant leader. And so I was invited to participate in the conference last year and really felt this extraordinary connection between my message on speed of trust and servant leadership and how they're so intertwined and connected and how really, as I put it, the defining outcome of the servant leader is trust. You know, that's how you know if you're a servant leader. The answer is trust. It's the litmus test. Trust is to the servant leader what profit is to a business. Mm-hmm. It's the outcome. It's the core measure, the scorecard. And so there's such a great alignment between my core message of the speed of trust and servant leadership and then what Art is doing with the Servant Leadership Institute.
We have to move from the speed of trust to the speed of commercials. Everybody sit tight. We are going to be right back.
AM 760 KFMB.
We're back on It's Your Money and Your Life with Stephen M.R. Covey, and we're really excited about the upcoming event. So can we talk a little bit about change? I know change is a very, very difficult thing for many people. In my profession, being a CPA, it's a really difficult thing for whatever reason because we like regulations and rules and IRS codes because it's all black and white. When you run into a situation where significant change needs to occur because the direction, for example, that a company is going or that relationships are going, how hard does change become when you introduce concepts that for many people are, I would say, very, very different and new?
It can be extremely difficult. I mean, again, as part of this new environment is that change is a constant. And it's not like we're just going to get the change done and accomplished. There's always new stuff that we've got to do. It's part of the new world today. But I'll tell you what, if there's low trust to begin with, then the quality of the change you're trying to implement will be compromised.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be diluted. It will go down. It will also take you longer to try to implement the change. It will cost you more. You'll get less engagement and involvement and commitment of your people, and you'll have less fun along the way when the trust is low. But if you can implement the change in a way that inspires trust, in other words, how you do what you do makes all the difference. So you listen first, and you demonstrate respect for what you hear, and you talk straight, and you're transparent, and you clarify expectations and keep the commitments. How you do what you do makes a profound difference, and it enables us to have far greater success with the change that we're implementing, where you get a multiplier working for you instead of the destructive tax working against you. You do it faster. You do it with less cost. You get greater engagement, energy, involvement, commitment from your people. Plus, you have a lot more fun along the way. And so I see trust as a great accelerator and multiplier to change initiatives. And you can take any change initiative, and if you were implementing that in two organizations that were the same size, same industry, the only difference is one was high trust, one was low trust. If you were to play that out, you'd see different in kind outcomes. And so that's why I see trust as a great driver of the change process. And sometimes people almost look at it the other way. They say, hey, when we implement change, we lose trust.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all the more reason why they need to be focused on how they do what they do. It makes all the difference.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, even though it's somewhat counterintuitive. One of the things I think about you, you do a lot of consulting. You're, as I said, very sought-after keynote speaker. But I want to talk briefly about your business career. Unlike a lot of consultants I know, you actually are a former CEO who actually, under your direction, significantly grew the Covey Leadership Center, correct, when you took that over in your role as president and CEO?
Yes. In fact, I like to, when someone asks me, well, tell me about you and Speed of Trust, I say, you know what? My main thing is that I'm not just kind of a theory guy. I see myself as a practitioner, as a doer. I've done it. And I think that's important when you talk about a topic like trust, just the same as it is talking on the topic like servant leadership, that if sometimes people view it as soft, taking the hard-edge economic approach to it and having kind of the platform of credibility, of being a practitioner and not just a writer, that's, I think, a better platform on which to start. And so, yes, I see myself as a practitioner first and thought leader second.
Yeah, and if I'm assuming I can say this out loud because it's public information, it stated that, I guess, when your ultimate exit strategy was a merger with Franklin Quest, is that correct, that you formed Franklin Covey, if memory serves?
Yes.
And I believe that the articles I read about that said that that was about a $150 or $160 million transaction, where I'm not sure what the company was worth when you took it over, but probably less than $10 million, right?
Yes, that's accurate. It was worth just $2.4 million.
$2.4, okay.
And we turned it into organization worth $160 million.
Well, you're a consultant that I would want to talk to if I'm trying to grow my company. That's for darn sure. So you're going to be one of the keynote speakers at Servant Leadership Institute, correct?
Absolutely. I'm really honored to be invited to speak. I spoke there a year ago. I felt a real connection with the audience and with the servant leadership message, tying trust to it, and honored to be coming back and having a chance to speak again, as well as participating in the panel with Ken and John and Art.
And here's my last big question. If this one is asking you too much about predicting the future, you've seen a lot during your very successful business career, both as a CEO as well as a writer and keynote speaker and consultant. But if you looked at the business world today and say tried to look out, say 10 years from now, Do you think Servant Leadership Institute is going to become the pervasive way of doing things? Or I mean, how do you see the future, say, 10 years from now or one generation removed from you?
Yes. I think there's no question that we're going to see trends towards that. I still think that we'll see a lot of traditional type of stuff going on. I don't think it's going to be all one or the other. Mm-hmm. It's just like these transitions always take a little bit longer than you think. You think that we'd have more authentic leadership type approaches today than we do, but there's the other, the command and control style is still deeply rooted.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the nature of the world changing, like we described earlier, where it's moved from control to collaboration,
mm-hmm.
the fact that we've moved from kind of one primary stakeholder to multiple stakeholders, as we talked about, and the fact that the new leaders coming up and recognizing there's a better way to lead, people like Tony Hsieh of Zappos.com, mm-hmm.
sure.
that are all about, you know, creating happiness for their customers and for their own people, and they really have a servant leader's heart and mindset, that there's no question that when people see more and more companies and organizations that are doing great things, getting great results, and doing it in a way that inspires the trust and that serves the people, that people are going to say, hey, this is not just a nice idea that's, you know, and something that is a good thing to do. But this is an economic thing to do,
mm-hmm.
and you get good results. And where we'll be in 10 years, I don't know, other than I think we're clearly going to be moving in that direction, and you'll see far more of this type of approach than you do today. And I think as it relates to trust, and again, trust is so connected to servant leadership, I think you'll see a similar thing. I think just like 15 years ago, hardly anyone measured employee engagement.
Right.
Today, almost everyone is measuring employee engagement. I think you'll see a similar thing with trust. Today, very few are truly systematically measuring trust with all their stakeholders. But I predict 15 years from now, they will be. And almost like you saw with engagement, it will be that prevalent where people are recognizing the value of this is so significant. And I think you'll see a similar trajectory towards servant leadership of recognizing that it's about your intent, it's about the motive and the agenda, and not, you know, leadership is a choice, not a position. And the positional approach versus the servant leadership approach, I think they'll become more and more differentiated. And it will be like seeing that you don't play tennis with a golf club.
Right.
The tool is not suited to the reality. And the reality now is requiring a different tool and a different style of leadership.
You know, I see two demographic phenomenon or changes. One is the millennials, they to a man or woman seem to want to be involved in business enterprises that actually are making a difference in their community or the world as opposed to just making money. And then the other one I see is, I call it the feminization of capitalism, as more and more women have entered the workforce and grown into positions of leadership. Women tend to resolve issues and conflict and change differently than men do. You know, men just go outside and slug it out, whereas women tend to be more collaborative by nature, I think, not to, you know, make any stereotypes, certainly. But I think these two, I would say demographic changes, I think certainly lead to servant leadership as becoming more and more relevant in the future. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think the combination of those trends and the others we've talked about all play towards this becoming a more relevant approach to leading teams and organizations. There's no question about it.
Mr. Covey, really appreciate your time again. For our listeners, servantleadershipinstitute.com, Coronado, the beautiful Coronado Marriott Hotel. In fact, I interviewed Debbie Marriott Harrison. She's in charge of corporate culture there.
Uh-huh.
So keeping it in the family in terms of where we're staying.
Uh-huh.
March 9th and 10th in Coronado, California, where the average temperature in March is 72 degrees. Everybody needs to be there. So anyway, Mr. Covey, really appreciate your time. Can't thank you enough for being with us. Thank you so much.
Certainly, Richard. Thank you. Delighted to be on this session together, and I really look forward to seeing people in on March 9th again.
We'll see you out there. Thanks again.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Hi, this is Richard Musio, and we're back, and it's time to thank our sponsors. We couldn't do this great show without our wonderful sponsors, and in no particular order, that would be UBS, Mr. Michael Carantra and Drew Freitas from UBS on Prospect Street in La Jolla. Thank you very much. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Polito Epic, CPAs in Vista, that's Don Epic, CPA, and Paul Polito, CPA. Our other most favorite CPA on the planet, Jason Kruger, CPA with Signature Analytics, the best CFO firm here in San Diego. Brenda Geiger with the law office of Brenda Geiger. Brenda specializes in asset protection and estate planning. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, helping business owners with business valuation and understanding the risks that drive the values of their businesses and how to reduce those risks and increase business value. Our new banking sponsor, California Republic Bank with Lane Elliott, specializing in working with wealthy families and family offices. Hub International Insurance, formerly Mars Maddox Insurance. Neil Staley, going to be an upcoming guest here in March. Experts in the Health Care Act and employee benefits. Stop Financial Elder Abuse Alliance with Paul Hines from Hearthstone Wealth Management. And certainly last but not least, Servant Leadership Institute. Check out servantleadershipinstitute.com. And of course, they are the subject of tonight's show. So a big thank you to all of our sponsors. And if any listeners want more information about our sponsors, how to find them, what they do, everything is up on our website at iymoney.com. So artfully maintained by Courtney Lauver with PopX Graphics. So again, check out iymoney.com for more information about our great sponsors. And we have with us Joanne Lamb and Roxanne Johnson. They are both HR managers for WD-40, I believe, in separate departments, and also involved in the great Servant Leadership Institute event that we have coming up in Coronado on March 9th and 10th. Servantleadershipinstitute.com for more information. Joanne and Roxanne, welcome. How are you today?
We're great. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Good. How long have you been involved with Servant Leadership Institute?
Well, several years we've known about Servant Leadership Institute as neighbors and business colleagues here in the San Diego community. We were introduced to Art Barter a few years ago when we attended his conference, and he's also been a participant with us in our leadership laboratory as a guest speaker on our leadership speakers panel that we have at our graduation event.
Yeah, it's a great organization. I'm looking forward to the event very much. My wife, Mary, is going to be there for the whole time. I'll be there for part of it.
Oh, now, great.
Now, you're both in HR, is that correct?
Yes.
And so tell me, how do you apply HR to the servant leadership process? Since I always sort of think of HR like accounting, where they just sort of put you in a room to take care of W-2s and so on.
Not at the WD-40 company. We are definitely partners to our leaders. And in terms of servant leadership, we try to embed the concept of servant leadership into all the different programs that we have here that impact our people. So whether it's performance management systems, which are sort of unique at the WD-40 and how we run that, to our leadership development programs and classes and workshops that we run, all the way to just our, you know, when we have to coach and counsel with individual employees or what we call tribe members here at WD-40, our tribe, we try to embed the philosophy of servant leadership throughout all of those programs.
So if I was an employee of WD-40 and I was undergoing a performance review, for example, are there certain things on your checklist or questions that sort of originate out of the themes of Servant Leadership Institute?
I would say even just by the title of our performance management program alone, you get the connection to servant leadership because our entire motto is help me get an A.
Okay.
The role of the leader is to help the tribe member to get an A, means help me be clear on the purpose for my position, help me be clear on the expectations of me, help me be clear on how do I conduct myself? How do I live and succeed within the values structure that we've designed to support our company culture? And the leader's role is to really model that, to champion it, to help that tribe member understand what does that look like when it comes to life. And by being clear on what that looks like, the tribe member can then have the freedom to operate and succeed with a path that's been cleared for them, unobstructed, unobstructed, and well-supported by the leaders.
And I know you're doing a workshop at the Servant Leadership Institute event. I assume it's on this very precise topic that we're talking about?
It's not.
Yeah. It's not, okay.
The topic that we've been asked to present on is a topic from one of our leadership series that we have here at WD40, and it's on conflict resolution.
Okay.
So we feel that even in a servant-led organization, there's always conflict, basically where there's more than one human or animal, I guess you could say, there will be conflict. So our goal is to help equip our people with an understanding of conflict, the sources, the body's reaction to it, both physically, mentally, and then different ways in which how to, in a healthy way, address conflict. And we actually like to look at conflict as it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing. Conflict can be really a good, healthy thing, and how you work through it is what's key in that.
Yeah, and I use another word for conflict. Frequently, it's change. Your conflict is centered around potential change. That is to say, things were one way, and you're attempting to make them a better way.
Yeah.
Do you find that a lot of people have a really, really difficult time with just making changes, even if everybody knows that it's good for the organization and maybe even good for them?
Of course. Who moved my cheese?
Exactly.
I think what you might be describing is one of the sources of conflict called territoriality, when people have their arms around something that they perceive that they own or that they're comfortable with, any disruption to that norm can produce some form of conflict. It could also be an economic change for them, something that changes their ability to have an economic impact for themselves or for others. And, you know, those are just a couple of the natural sources of conflict that we will talk about in the workshop. And the theme of the conference, which is Ready, Mindset, Go, is a fantastic foreground for this topic of conflict resolution, because what we believe in the state of mind that we have every day does influence the output of our energy and the experience that we all have together. So understanding the overlap between the mindset and conflict and our approach to resolving conflict does definitely shape the kind of culture that we create in our organizations.
Yeah, and I know your company, WD-40, it's literally an institution here in this town of San Diego, been around for a long, long time.
Yeah, 60 years plus.
60 years. I mean, it's actually older than I am, and that's hard to be. But hang on, everybody. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Roxanne Johnson and Joanne Mann from WD-40.
AM 760.
We are back with It's Your Money and Your Life. So, Roxanne and Joanne, quick question. To the extent that you're employing servant leadership concepts in that company and speaking about change, what kind of process or transition, and how difficult was it for WD-40 to, say, move through that process of being, you know, a company that was founded, you know, with a certain culture that sort of transitioned to this newer way of, shall we say, leading?
Sure. I mean, we do. We have a history of 60 years, and we've definitely obviously changed a lot over the past years. One of our biggest changes over the past few years that we've experienced is that we're no longer just selling stuff that comes out of a blue and yellow can, which is always our
right, like when my hinges squeak, I pull out the WD-40.
Yeah. Everyone knows us as the multi-use purpose, which is the traditional WD-40 can. And that is our crown jewel, but we're starting to really branch out into more specialized areas. So you can buy now cans of WD-40 Specialist at different locations that specialize in certain areas. So whether it's a lithium or like a special penetrant or a degreaser, very specialized areas. But it's been a huge shift for us because it's teaching people who for example, sales, used to just have to know one product really, really well. We're now expanding into different specialized areas, and they need to know the science and the technology behind 8+ products. Plus, we're trying to grow into new channels of distribution. So, it, you know, at one point it was hardware stores and big box stores. Now we're looking into farm and military and lots of other broader distribution channels. So with that comes change, a shift in what we need to learn and what we need to do.
And how servant leadership has helped us to bridge that growth and to help our employees make that type of a change, it really comes down to leaning on the core principles that we have. So helping our people get an A, the role of the leader as the coach, seeking out what they need. How can we help you succeed? What do you need to be at your personal best? What talents do you have that we're not taking advantage of? What kind of learning, new learning tools do you need? And I think in approaching it with a servant's heart, working with our tribe, it's really opened up that dialogue to understand how leadership can support those people who are really advancing our business.
Makes a lot of sense. Another question, the people who work in a business as large as yours, you have baby boomers and Gen X and Gen Y and millennials. How is servant leadership facilitated getting people who come from these different generations to actually coexist successfully so that the company's culture and vision can be implemented?
Well, I'll touch on that. I think a lot of it honestly boils down to our values. And yes, it is true. We have all four generations working here at the WD-40 company because we have pretty low turnover. In fact, I just met with a gentleman today on this is his last week with the company. He's been here 31 years.
Wow.
And then we're also hiring people right out of school with, you know, not a lot of experience, but excited to be in the workforce.
Who don't know what a piece of paper is.
Yeah, exactly. And so I would say the common thread we have here at WD-40, which is what we really, it's the cornerstone of our culture, really, and who we are, is our values. And I know a lot of companies have values, and maybe in some organizations it's just something you see on a wall and you don't think about. But I would say the values are alive and well. And one of the examples of that is we actually have our values on our performance review form. We have performance review conversations and dialogue every quarter. And if a person is succeeding in their technical skills and their essential functional areas, but not living the values, and they are actually rated by their supervisor on the values, that can actually bring a person's rating down. So, you know, our values are, you know, do the right thing, and, you know, we've got five or six of our values that are all really important. And if you're not living those values, despite of how well you're doing your job, that's not acceptable here.
Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense. So is this the first time you presented a workshop at Servant Leadership, or were you there last year?
It's our first time presenting.
Okay.
We are thrilled. We are absolutely honored to be with all of the esteemed colleagues and presenters. And this isn't the first time, obviously, that we've presented on topics like this to groups. However, we have a special place in our heart for the Servant Leadership Institute. The concepts embodied there are so close to the fabric of the culture that we've been able to help contribute to here. And, you know, being here in the same town with such a great legacy as theirs, it's a real honor for us.
Yeah, I can't wait for the event. And have you had other people in leadership positions in your company go through servant leadership as well, or is it just the two of you?
Well, we have quite a few leaders who've been exposed to the servant leadership way of leading.
Actually, our CEO, I believe, was a keynote speaker a couple of years ago. That's Gary Ridge.
Yeah, I believe Gary was a speaker in 2012 or 13. I apologize.
Right.
I should have looked that up.
Yeah,
and the servant leadership concept is also presented in part. I can't speak to exactly what format in the MSEL program at USD, which is the Master's of Science Executive Leadership.
My alma mater.
Program.
Yeah,
congratulations. Great. WD-40 has a scholarship program where we we place 1 to 2 employees through that program on a scholarship every year, and they come back and they're more servant driven than ever. So I can't exactly speak to the connect between the two, but it's a concept that's reinforced for them for sure.
And the MSCL program is obviously connected to Ken Blanchard, who I understand is one of the main speakers of the event. And I would say Ken and Gary co-authored a book on our performance management program called Don't Mark My Paper, Help Me Get an A.
Yeah, I've read it. It's tremendous.
Okay, great. So then in a sense, that you know, every tribe member has been exposed to that servant leadership concept because that book and its philosophy is alive and well here at WD40.
Joanne and Roxanne, really appreciate your time again, everybody. ServantLeadershipInstitute.com, the 5th National Conference, March 9th and 10th at the lovely Coronado Marriott. Again, that's a Monday and a Tuesday, March 9th and 10th. Don't miss it, ServantLeadershipInstitute.com. And again, Joanne and Roxanne, thank you very much. Very much appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
As always, a big thank you to Eric Rubalcava on the board, helping us out as he does so professionally every Saturday night. Also, big thanks to Dave Sniff, our programming genius, and Craig Blanke on the sales side. My partner Joe Vecchio will be back when the Servant Leadership Institute series is done. He's been out working on a special film project. So again, thanks everybody. Join us next week on It's Your Money and Your Life. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you.